Talk Shoes. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Hey there, folks. I'm Lynn, and I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone. Once again, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Bobby Neer, Robert, and Dave. Hello, guys. How you all doing?
Hello.
Doing fine. Hello.
All right. Good. You're all doing good.
Happy July the 2nd.
That's right. Happy July the 2nd, and very close to the 4th of July. That's great. And our episode today is titled Mr. Dingle the Strong, starring the incomparable Burgess Meredith. And I'll turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
And now, Mr. Serling.
I've only got about 18 seconds to tell you that Mr. Burgess Meredith returns to the Twilight Zone as Mr. Dingle the Strong. He plays the role of an incredible little man who's given the strength of about 500 men and comes out of it as a kind of a 20th century Hercules and Samson all rolled into one. It's designed to send you right from your set into a fast bowl of spinach. It's catching.
And if you don't know, that was Rob picking up the phone, and it broke on him, so.
And he also says that he was given the strength of 500 men, but it was actually 300. But anyway, Mr. Dingle the Strong is about Luther Dingle. He's a weak, nervous, and unassuming vacuum salesman who's not a very good salesman. So at the neighborhood bar, he gets punched and pushed around by the local bookie and the local bully who bets on all the sporting events. So for an experiment, a couple of Martians, well, they had two heads and one body, decide to give Dingle the strength of 300 humans. Dingle then proceeds to exploit this newfound strength by lifting a statue, breaking rocks in half, lifting a park bench up in the air with a woman sitting on it, etc., etc., etc. He gains the attention of the media, and they decide to have him demonstrate his feats of strength to a live TV audience. The Martians are appalled by his behavior and take away his strength during the TV show. So Dingle's now the laughingstock. But as the Martians prepare to leave, a two-headed couple from Venus walk in and tell the Martian they're looking for an Earthling on whom to perform an intelligence experiment. The Martians recommend Dingle, so the Venusians, I guess that's how you pronounce the Venus people, Venusians, shine their ray on him, and here we go again. So, okay, that is the story. Isn't that amazing? That's the whole story. And, okay, I admit it in my original review on our Yahoo group that I am a complete sucker for any TV show, movie, or production of any kind with Burgess Meredith in it. I've adored this man's work, really. I have for over 35 years. And I believe he can make the worst script somewhat enjoyable to watch. I mean, he can't make a bad script great, but in my opinion, he can make a bad script into something watchable. And it's totally obvious to me why Rod Serling chose Burgess Meredith to star in four Zone episodes. I mean, the man is a brilliant actor, whether playing the ill-fated Henry Bemis in Time Enough at Last, or the doomed Rodney Wordsworth, it was a Wordsworth, in The Obsolete Man, and the devious Mr. Smith and the Printer's Devil, or this guy, the pitiful Luther Dingle. Burgess just engages his viewers. So of the four episodes I just mentioned, of course this one, Mr. Dingle the Strong, is certainly the worst, and the least gripping episode, but I didn't think it was horrible. And there were others on a Yahoo group who also didn't hate it. The Martians, they were silly looking, with their two heads sticking out of a large shiny box. And the two visitors from Venus, played by a couple of nine-year-old boys, were hardly convincing. I don't know, somehow the story entertained me enough that I definitely don't mind seeing it more than once. And I have to admit, though, that using kids to play the Venus guys, that really annoyed me. He could have done what they did in The Wizard of Oz and hired dwarves for the role. You know, little dwarves that you know, what were they in The Wizard of Oz? Robert, help me here. What were the
Well, the Lollipop Gang. But you know what's funny about these Venusians, Lynn, is they must have been going through puberty the way they talk, because they seem to got a deep voice for 10-year-old kids.
Now, do you think that was a come on?
Yes, let's go ahead and zap him.
Well, you know what? Okay. I'll tell you, I think the dwarves would have appreciated the work. The little kids, they didn't need any work. I mean, I think that really blew it out of the water when you saw these little kids playing the Venusians. You know, if you had used adults, maybe, I don't know, maybe that wouldn't have been so bad. It still would have been a bad episode, but it still would have been a little bit more believable if you used dwarves.
The little people, yeah.
Yeah, little people. That is politically correct, yes, politically correct. As always, though, the special effects were nothing compared to what we see today, but they were okay. They were acceptable for that time period. It was important to show off his Dingle's new super strength, and when he reaches over to turn off his alarm clock, he pulverizes it, and he tears the phone book, and he lifts the woman off the park bench, and the statue. He picks up the statue and all that other cute stuff. And it was trick photography and stage props, you know, to put to good use. But the other thing, the bar owner, that was the thing that got me. The bar owner, like, he seems very compassionate towards Dingle. And he tries to defend him, but he doesn't do the greatest job of it. You know, instead of stepping in before Dingle gets punched, he simply yells at the bully after the fact. You know, he yells at Don Rickles and says, "Oh, come on, why do you keep hitting poor Dingle? Well, why don't you, you know, he's a big guy. Why don't you just come in ahead of time and say, you know, don't you hit him. You know, don't. If you hit him, I'm going to throw you out of here." He keeps threatening to throw him out, but he waits until after the fact. So
why don't you just throw a sand in his face and he have the whole trifecta there?
Exactly. So that kind of bothered me about the bar owner. Yeah, you're defending Dingle, but you're not actually doing anything to help him. You're just picking him up off the floor after he gets knocked out. But, of course, Don Rickles, he was just absolutely perfect in that role. I mean, you know, you can't help but feel all that satisfaction when Dingle has the strength and he gets his revenge by picking up Don Rickles' character and spinning him around and then throwing him over the bar. But sadly, it all ends with a big thud, you know, because of how everything turns out. The Martians take his strength away. But maybe he'll do better with his new gift of intelligence, but probably not. So overall, I found this episode to be somewhat entertaining. Not classic, not good, not great. But, you know, Burgess Meredith can turn even a pointless and stupid story like this into something worthwhile. Don Rickles basically playing the role that he's become known for throughout his entire career, and he does it to perfection. And, oh, by the way, what's his name? James Milholland, who plays the TV host, was in 3 Zone episodes, including this one. The After Hours, he played the department store manager, and he was also in I Dream of Jeannie. So, you know, I may be in the minority. I'm giving this episode a 3 for good, only because I absolutely adore Burgess Meredith. So I'm going to let Robert and everyone else tear it up at this point. Go ahead, Robert.
Well, I mean, if we could separate the story from the actor, let me ask you, Lynn, if you separated the story from the actor, how would you rate the story but not Burgess? Say if Burgess wasn't in the story. How would you
terrible.
Rate the story?
Absolutely terrible.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, you can tell I have prejudice here. Yeah, there's definitely prejudice.
Well, I mean, that's the point. The whole problem with this story is, in one word, silly. And that's pretty much, again, like Rick Wall would say, this is a morality play. If we misuse what we're given, it's taken away. But in the case of Mr. Dingle, he becomes the classic punching bag, or what I would say, the test subject of the universe. It was interesting how the first 5 minutes of the story, and Rod was trying to, it looked like he was trying to be serious, but after that first punch and Burgess Meredith's character is knocked over the bar, then it decides to take a turn to comedy for the rest of the episode. That's when I started my disbelieving of what I was seeing. And, you know, the comments that I made was everything from the door being pulled off the hinges to the pathetic styrofoam stones that could be broken in half, to the stupid-looking Martians and the aliens from Venus look silly. And you got to tell me, do all the aliens come by in twos? I mean, I would think there would be separate aliens. I mean, we've clearly seen it in other Twilight Zone episodes. But
yeah, didn't you think that was strange? Didn't you think that was strange that both of them came with two heads?
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was because simply they were supposed to be invisible to the people in the bar. So the only way they could speak is by having somebody else to speak to. So you needed two for a conversation to occur.
So you think it made sense that there were two heads on each one?
Well, it didn't have to be two heads, but they needed to be two entities each time so that you could hear them discussing what they were going to do.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. But I thought it was
Separate entities.
Group.
Yeah.
Clearly, the lifting also the park bench in the park, you could tell was being done by cables lifting it, and Burgess underneath it holding the chair up. And unfortunately, this episode did not belong in a series like Twilight Zone. This episode should have been in a comedy sitcom, because basically this script was written like a sitcom. I compared it to My Favorite Martian, which had Ray Walston and Bill Bixby, ran 65 to 66. In about 24 minutes, very comfortable to the time Twilight Zone is, and CBS, of course, put that out as well. I mean, that was the closest thing. I mean, Dick Van Dyke Show or other comedy sitcoms, that this would have fit much more better than Twilight Zone. Very much a precursor of Mork and Mindy, I felt, was another thing that I brought up, too. I mean, I agree with Lynn. Burgess Meredith is a wonderful actor, and I enjoyed the time that he is in the episode. But of the four stories he's been in, and Lynn said, this is the least of my favorite. Time Enough at Last would be first for me, The Obsolete Man, Printer's Devil, and then finally this episode. And also, I felt Don Rickles was being held back in this episode. If you watch his comedy routine, stand-up routine, him being on Johnny Carson and stuff like that, he's a hilarious man. And
I saw him in person. I actually saw his stand-up show in person about 15 years ago, and he's so out there. It's unbelievable.
Oh,
he is. Totally out there, yeah.
And that's his stick. It's very much like Rodney Dangerfield or other stand-up comedians. The thing is, I felt he was very misused in this story, and there probably was scenes where they would have to take a cut or take a break, and I bet you Don cracked some jokes and stuff on there, or there was probably points where he was getting ready to do some comedy, and I think Rod held him back and said, you know, well, I don't want it in this story, just act, you know, like the big bully.
A bully walking to the bully, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was written by him, so it was his input, I would think. Go ahead, Rick.
Writers, producers hardly ever go on set. I don't know. I assume he didn't. But there's a rule.
He did occasionally go onto the set. As a matter of fact, he did go onto the set for Shadow Play, and he did go onto the set for Time Enough at Last. He did actually go on set for certain episodes.
Okay,
You're right. He didn't go on for many, but he did for some.
Well, he started the story on the set, didn't he? They would pan away,
yeah,
and he'd actually be on the set where he'd... I mean, he was in this one, he was sitting at a table, very strange, I thought, because they allowed him to smoke a cigarette, but it couldn't show him drinking alcohol, and he had a beer mug that was filled with water. I thought it was strange.
That doesn't mean that he was on the set. They could have done, you know, they'd make the set like a week before they shoot, usually. They could have shot it that time, too. It doesn't necessarily mean that they were shooting it at the same time.
I think Rod Serling showed up on set more in the very first two seasons than... In the first, season, the second season, and then after a while, he didn't so much. But I think in the first couple of seasons, he was on set more.
Well, what was interesting, I felt, you know, Don Rickles, he was pretty good in Kelly's Heroes and in the part that he had in that one. But yeah, I felt he was just misused in this episode. You pretty much had anybody as a bully, you know, act in that role. I felt Don was held back. As usual, I bring some clips, but I want to do a little experiment. Of course, Twilight Zone, they did do some experiments on their show. So I decided to take a clip from today's episode and decide to add a laugh track to prove a point of, you know, what I've been talking about with this episode.
Cool.
Tell me this.
You sure we're invisible? No. Beyond any doubt.
You don't have to do that. But this man doesn't know anything about it.
You don't even have to answer this guy. Now, just because he don't happen to like the Phillies.
Let me tell him. You have a brain of your own, don't you? You have your own viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the Phillies of 1953?
Phillies 1953.
That's right. Phillies of 1953.
Did you ever see such jerky-looking creatures? And one had you. Typical. Not really, though. The one in the middle, the one who just suffered the physical damage, he may be the very one we've been looking for. How do you mean? Silence. I'm receiving his waves. Name is Dingle. Abject coward. Does not even possess what Earth creatures call minimum muscle. Decidedly a subphysical type. I think we have found our subject.
You intend to give him the additional strength?
We haven't found anyone weaker, have we? I believe he will be an acceptable subject. Give him, around 11 secograms atomic weight. That should make him roughly 300 times stronger than the average human being. Yes, I think that will do it. We had better contact Central Laboratories. Tell them we have found a subject.
In other words, you're telling me that you thought Robin Roberts had more stuff than Clem Levine?
To be perfectly frank and candid, as to two men, as good as they both are in all things being equal.
Come on already, take your pick.
Robert?
You start one more rough house in here and I'm not going
to... But you get the idea of what I'm trying to get across with that. In the same,
good.
Yeah, in the same point, here is a clip from the first episode of My Favorite Martian, and you'll understand the similarity of what I did with Mr. Dingle.
Are you through? What are you waiting for me to say? Take me to your leader?
Who are you?
Well, I could give you some wild tale of being a Russian astronaut, or the designer of an experimental spacecraft. But the plain fact of the matter is, I'm from Mars.
Mars?
Mars. Now, don't look so astonished. I'm a professor of anthropology from Mars, specializing in this primitive planet.
Mars? I'm afraid you got hit a little harder than you think.
That idiot in your antique rocket plane almost ran into me.
You mean the X-15?
And now I'm marooned on this backward planet until I can repair my ship.
Now, hold it. You mean the X-15 almost ran into your, that thing?
Precisely. It was lumbering along at barely 4,000 miles an hour. I had to strain my ship to get out of its way.
You know how fast he was going?
I can tell you to the fifth decimal place. That idiot at the controls reported me to his base as a flying saucer. Ooh. Oh, just don't sit there. I've been hurt.
So you see the comparison between the two. If you added a laugh track to Mr. Dingle side by side to My Favorite Martian. My last clip I got, of course, as I said, I was very unhappy with the way, you know, Don Wrinkle's character as the better was portrayed in this episode. So, here's a clip of Don visiting Johnny Carson in 1986.
I saw you one night. You were out at La Scala restaurant not too long ago. And somebody says, there's Don Rickles over there. And I said, where? I said, I don't know. No, right over there. I said, I don't see him. You had your back to me.
Mm.
I had not seen you since obviously you'd been frightened by a ghost or something. And the hair had turned white.
Mm.
Mm. And you had your... I said, I know. I said, where are you talking about? And he says, no, the man with the white hair. I said, Rickles doesn't have white hair.
Mm.
Well, what happened?
Mm.
None of your business.
No, actually, when my mother passed away, rest his soul, everybody said, his mother died, he got white hair. Then they said he has cancer, and they're keeping it quiet, he has white hair. Then they said he has all kinds of problems. He has white hair.
Mm-hmm.
Then they said Barbara and I were separated, which is ridiculous because with the money I owe her, there's no way.
Yeah, of course.
But actually, as we get older, you know, we're pretty much the same age. You're 6 months older, a year older than me.
Yeah, I guess so.
There's a difference with you. You can see the highway. No, he does. His face, you know, your face is starting, you're starting to show your age, you know.
Well,
I'm still young and wonderful. You still get out in the tennis court with the funny little tight little shorts and the leotard saying to your girlfriend, yes, sir.
What are you talking about? You got a face that could hold a three-day rain. What are you talking about? Three-day rain. That's right. Rain.
Okay.
What are you talking about?
Gentile leading the Jew, 3-0 going into the last.
But that's just an example. I mean, he's great. I love Don Rickles, and but
absolutely
clearly didn't fit in this episode. So.
Absolutely. He's
my rating, 2 out of 5, and I'm going to pass it over to Bobby.
Thank you, Robert. I hate to tell everybody this, but I don't have my usual fascinating critique today because I consider this episode to be not even worth spending your breath on. Robert called it silly. I would use other words to define it, such as stupid and juvenile and worthless and an insult to anybody with any intelligence. It's just a horrible, horrible episode. It has nothing in it all. I mean, Lynn and I watched it yesterday. First we watched Time Enough and Last Again, and then we watched this. And if you watch those back-to-back, you're just appalled. And it's simply a ridiculous episode. And I can only repeat what Robert already said, which is it has no business being in this series at all. And I'm getting very, very tired, I have to admit, of Twilight Zone attempting to do humor and attempting to change what has worked all along. I don't believe in any of that. Back in 1959 and 1960 and so forth, just like today, if I want to laugh, I know where to go, and it's usually not the TV. I don't need any comedy relief, and what is a serious series? I don't believe in it. I never did. I don't think it ever works, even with a laugh track. It just doesn't work. It's just not funny. This is absolutely a pitiful, pitiful episode. As far as Burgess Meredith is concerned, I agree. He was very good in the series, in those stories that were worth his while. But I don't believe like Lynn does that if you have a favorite actor, they can do just about anything and you'll be fascinated. That doesn't work for me. I care about the story. I mean, as much as I like actors like Robert De Niro and Jack Nicholson, between them, they've made plenty of lousy movies. And if the movie is lousy, then their appearance in it does not work for me. I won't sit and watch it just because they're in it. So that doesn't work here either. I mean, Burgess Meredith adds something to stories, but if you don't give him anything to do, then it just kind of lays there. This is just a ridiculous episode. You know, it's interesting that Robert play the laugh track with it, but it doesn't even work with that. It doesn't. I never believed it did anyway. I don't like laugh tracks generally. Take a series like The Odd Couple, which was one of my favorite all-time TV series, but it didn't really get good until they had a live audience. In the first season, when they had a laugh track, it was absolutely dreadful. It isn't any good. So that doesn't work, and it certainly doesn't work in a series like this. Laugh track or not, it just doesn't belong here. Now, yesterday, I went to IMDb about this, as I often do, just to see what other people think about it. Over at IMDb, it gets it from people who go there, not necessarily people who post there, a 6.7 rating out of 10, which I find unbelievable. I don't know how they came up with that.
Way too high. Yeah.
Oh, it's absurd. Well, what is there, on certain episodes, there are reviews from professional critics. By professional, I mean people who have their own website. And there's a review there of this particular episode from eFilm Critic, which is a website that does movies and some TV shows. And I wanted to read a couple of paragraphs out of his review. I'll skip over the part where he describes what happens in the episode. We all know that. After he does that, he says the following. Directed by Twilight Zone veteran John Brom, Mr. Dingle the Strong cannot be taken seriously in any respect. From the very opening scene, we're presented with a two-headed alien being that looks about as realistic as one of the local trick-or-treating kids during Halloween. And the presence of Don Rickles as Dingle's constant source of beatings brings more than its share of laughs. Meredith, as always, is the quintessential Twilight Zone everyman. When the Martians decide to give Dingle the strength of 300 men, he begins a slow change from wimp to braggart that very few could pull off convincingly. However, the main problem with this undoubtedly funny episode is that it's just too funny. I mean, I almost fell off the chair when I read that. Not so much that it will bust your gut with laughter, more cartoonish and outlandish, unlike some of the better episodes of the series, where the humor is intertwined with drama. This is all fluff and comes across like a half-hour comedy sketch. Of the co-stars, Rickles steals the show. Now, you know, I don't know, I'm glad he was laughing, but I can't imagine anybody would say that this was undoubtedly funny. And I found nothing funny about it. Well, that's one of the problems I have when you take a serious series and you put humor in it. I don't want you to do it at all, but if you're going to do it, be funny. At least I'll get something out of it and I'll say, I got to admit, it's pretty funny.
Yeah. Did you notice, as I did, like I said, the first 5 minutes, it seemed to go serious, and then it took the comedy twist. You wonder, why did Rod do that for? You have any idea?
I have no idea. I don't know.
I've got an exact idea.
Go ahead.
Because he told the makeup or stage actors to come up with something that looked like a Martian. He saw what they came up with and thought, there's no way we can pass that off as serious. We'll have to make it funny.
Well,
That makes sense to me.
If you're writing this episode and you see that it's not going to work as a serious story, rather than make it humorous, Rod certainly should have pulled the paper out of his typewriter and thrown it away. That would have done everybody a favor. I just think it's completely, completely worthless. Watching it yesterday, I had a tough time just getting through 25 minutes. I mean, it's just anything. I mean, what's the point? There is no point of it. And like I said, I'm tired of the humor. And I'm also, I have to say this, I know a lot of people aren't going to like it, but personally, like everybody else, I think The Twilight Zone is probably television's high watermark since it was invented. But you know what? I get really, really annoyed when there are series that are that good that do lousy stories. I don't give them a pass. What's on TV today, I give a pass to, because nothing's any good. So if you see anything good, it's amazing. But a series like The Twilight Zone does too many really lousy stories. And when you watch them, I'm just appalled because I expect better from it. That's the one thing about being a classic series or about being remembered 50 years later and having everybody like we do here and in our group talk about how fabulous it was. You need to be fabulous. That's the way it is. I mean, not all the time, obviously. That's asking too much. In the sports world, you know, if you're Babe Ruth, you're expected to put out all the time. You can't go into a slump. People don't want to see it. They don't want to hear about it. You're expected to be good all the time. It may be unreasonable, but if you're not, if you go into a slump, it's going to make headlines. And that's the way it is with this series. So I have no patience, really, when these episodes come up. As I said at our group today, the 4th of July marathon is coming up on Sci-Fi Channel beginning on Sunday. And it's an interesting list. There's some good ones. Most of the classics are in there. But there are quite a few that really don't belong in there. I know they have to fill couple of days, but still, I wouldn't even waste my time with those. It's just a shame that they put them in there. Now, as for Don Rickles, yeah, he can be funny in the right. I always thought he was. I'm not a big Don Rickles fan. He was. I used to turn on the Tonight Show when he was on. That's probably where he was best. But he doesn't do anything in here. I don't think he's funny at all. And you mentioned Don Rickles. I think he was funnier actually in that short-lived TV series that he had years later, CPO Sharky, if anybody remembers
that.
I remember that.
As bad as that was, only lasted, I think, a half a season or something.
Did you ever see him in person?
Me? No.
Oh,
no.
Absolutely fabulous. It's fabulous.
The only comedians I've ever seen in person are George Carlin and Rodney Dangerfield.
I saw both of them in person, but Don Rickles is fabulous in person.
I don't doubt it. But I mean, you know, give him something to do. You can't just sit him in there and expect him to be funny just for that. So all I can say is, it's just a bad episode. That's all. It's just another one of those meaningless stories. I don't know why Rod Serling didn't see it or maybe he did. I'm not a professional writer, so I can imagine that it's tough to come up with something good week after week after week. Sometimes it just doesn't work, and I would be surprised if he really thought that this was kind of episode that belongs in this series. In our poll, I gave it a zero because I just can't find anything to like about it. And I agree, Burgess Meredith is fabulous. And Don Rickles can be very funny. You put them together in a story, and guess what you get? Absolutely nothing if you have no story behind it. All righty, Lynn, that's it for me.
Okay, well, right now, I think we'll turn it over to Dave.
Yeah, I think that was the main thing. I mean, for once, I didn't think it was much of a story. It was. It seemed to be very, I mean, they were slow moving at the very start, and it looked like Robert said they were going to go one way, but I honestly think that remark I made is legit. I think presumably it's some sort of costume department or artist department that came up with this alien creation. And one look at that, I'm sure he was furiously rewriting the script. And he had to really go back. I always say anyway that he reuses his ideas two or three times. I mean, this is a little bit like that A Most Unusual Camera, where again they played it for laughs with the people with the camera that took pictures, and they made a whole mess of that, and it fell into a farce in a way. But then I think probably he wrote this, well, I mean, it appears after, but I think he wrote it after the one we talked about a couple of weeks back, A Penny for Your Thoughts, where Dick York got that ability to read minds. And, of course, for once, he actually came out on the upside of that. He got the ability, made use of it, got the girl, got the promotion, and, you know, there was actually a nice little payoff for him. And neatly, you know, his gift went away. I think when Rod was writing that, he thought, well, I wonder what would happen if we had it where we gave somebody a gift and they absolutely wasted it, which, of course, is what happened. Some of the effects were all right, but I couldn't believe that breaking a rock in half. You would need 10,000 times the strength of a man to break a rock in half because you've got no leverage. I mean, that rock was about 10 inches across in the centre, and it's just got no, you know, there's no. I mean, bending an iron bar would have been far easier than trying to snap a rock in half. I thought they did quite well with him lifting the statue up, but basically it comes back to that crazy alien.
Well, Dave, we had plenty of styrofoam rocks in Doctor Who, so.
It's actually easier to hit a rock with your fist and smash it than to actually try and snap a rock in half. Because there's no leverage. But anyway, that's nitpicking, really. I think basically it boils down to he had to go with it because they tried it through in a serious mode and it didn't work. One of the funniest things I thought was that ginormous BBC, well, not BBC, that TV camera that they brought in. And the chap who I think has already been mentioned, the James Milner, is it, or whatever he's called, the one that was in the After Hours one. It was carrying away this microphone with about 20 foot of cable. Didn't seem to be attached into anything, but never mind, it made him look the part. The barman, I quite like that actor, James Westerfield, I think. He was the one that was kind, well, semi-kind to our hero. I'm sure I've seen him lots of things. He's been in some quite big films with, I think he was in True Grit and On the Waterfront and Hang 'Em High. He's been in lots of them. Yeah?
Actually, Dave, that was a studio camera.
Yeah, but I was talking about, it looked enormous, didn't
it? They were that big. You know, you're thinking 2011, okay? A studio camera back then was about 3 feet high and about 4 feet long, and that's exactly the way it was. And it weighed
and
about
have the
150 pounds. Yes.
Well, yeah, you're probably right when I think about it. The BBC was, but it you know, when I saw that on that sort of, I suppose that dated it for me maybe, because often when here in the UK when we're watching some of these old series, I mean, I've watched some of the Twilight Zones where, you know, they're entering a rich man's house that's, and it's supposed to be the 60s. I'm thinking, gosh, that nearly looks as posh as some of the houses we have around here now, because they've got like low, you know, low coffee tables and posh kitchens and coffee percolators and things like that. looked about 20 years ahead of what it did in the UK in the 1960s. But basically, yes, I do agree. It was, I think it was played for laughs because I don't think he could make it work with those aliens done as they were. And that does annoy me because, especially if I'd been watching it at the time, I'd be thinking, here's me trying to get people interested in science fiction, and they watch that and they say, oh, that's what crazy Venusians look like and men from Mars. I mean, science fiction wasn't like that. You know, you knew those planets didn't have real life. I mean, unless you're thinking about, you know, these really crazy B movies and C movies, you know, with the women on Mars and things like that. But
unless Roger did it as a pastiche, I don't know.
Yeah, but I think one of the criticisms, and I made it already, really, was we had some very similar stories here, didn't we? In a very short time, we had A Most Unusual Camera, the Whole Truth, the one with the car that has to tell the truth, then The Penny for Your Thoughts, Room 22.
Right.
Towards the end, we had the Carol Burnett one, yeah.
Yeah, so he probably knocked about six or seven all around the same thing. So I think he gets an idea and thinks, which way can we do it? He finds two of the six ideas are good, and then he runs out of time and he thinks, I better use the third idea of these six. And then, you know, it's 3 days from the next week. He thinks, I better use another of those ideas. And before you know it, he's basically using an idea that probably would have got canned. Two out of five, I think.
Two out of five? That makes sense. I'll go with that. Yeah,
the only thing that was missing was what they should have done at the end of this episode was have a line of aliens waiting to take their turns and go out with it that way.
That would have been pretty cool. Hey, by the way, I don't know if anybody knew this, but you know the camera that they put in the bar, you know, when the television crew was there and the camera they put in the bar to broadcast his feats of strength. That same prop was used also in To Serve Man, the camera that was above the guy when he was laying there in the chamber to serve man. It was also used in Burgess Meredith's bedroom in The Obsolete Man. And Stopover in A Quiet Town, the church that you see behind Dingle in there, that was also Stopover in A Quiet Town. And also the park in which Dingle lifts up the statue and lifts the woman off. That same park was in No Time Like the Past, The Stop for Willoughby, I Sing the Body Electric, and Mute. So, you know, the same sets were used all over the place, and not everybody always notices that, including me, but it's always something to look at and say, oh, that's the same set there, you know.
One thing I did notice, and it stuck out like a sore thumb, and that was the double they'd used for Burgess Meredith when he's twirling the man above his head.
Him
I mean,
the head.
It was nowhere near a double, was it?
I thought I was the only one who ever noticed that.
Didn't look anything like him.
Oh,
didn't look anything like him.
I have, Dave, you don't know how much I thank you for that. I have mentioned that to about a half dozen people, and they swear they never noticed that. So I stopped telling people about that. I thought it was me. I thought I was the only one noticing it. I'd say to people, when you see him twirling the guy in the air, do you notice they do a real quick take on his face, and it like comes off real fast? Do you notice that's like a split-second thing, but it's not the same guy? Nobody ever notices that. Everybody always says, no, that's for just...
Oh, yeah.
He's about
60 or 80 pounds heavier. He looked like a wrestler or something.
Yes. And the face is different. I stopped mentioning that because I thought I was going nuts here. Thank you. Yes, yes. It's not the same guy. And Dave, you're my hero. Thank you for that. Okay. Oh, my God. I thought it was me. Okay. It's not the same guy twirling them. All right. Okay. So, Rick, what do you have to say?
All right. Well, we all know Mr. Serling was not a comedy writer.
Right.
He couldn't write comedy to save his life. I don't know why if he wanted comedy episodes, he didn't hire comedy writers.
He should not have attempted it. You're right.
Should have got Sid Caesar or somebody or Mel Brooks to help out. Go ahead, Rick.
There were comedy writers back then. He didn't need Mel Brooks or, you know, besides, you're talking about even back then, two guys that they couldn't probably afford in the budget. Speaking of which, again, I've said this a number of times, Rod had a lot of friends. Burgess was one of them, and a lot of times they came up to him and go, "Hey, Rod, put me in one of your episodes. You don't even have to pay me." And Burgess, as I said, was a friend, and that's why he was in so many. He didn't even get paid in most of them.
Well, it's a sign of respect is the thing. They really respected him. So
I agree. Yeah, that's right.
But he didn't even ask, so... I agree that he's probably with Lynn, that he's probably the best thing in it. They wasted.
Don Rickles.
Don Rickles, yes. Mm-hmm. You hockey puck. how can you forget him, Rick? And it was all right for like comedy, sort of, I guess. But like I said. Rod, you should have let somebody else do the writing. And maybe also maybe blame the director. But as I said a number of times, if something goes wrong somewhere, I always blame the director. So why not?
Well, I don't have nothing against comedy if it's used properly.
In
like,
the
for
right
example,
venue.
Comedy
right,
horror.
In
yeah,
the,
like
in the
comedy
right
horror.
Venue.
Is
exactly.
A great example of one where we have horror, but we have a sense of comedy or humor to offset.
Dan O'Brien wrote it as a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and he's not necessarily a comedy writer, but he's a better comedy writer than Rod is. All right. It worked. But again, like I said, I'm sure they had enough of a budget to hire comedy writers if he wanted a comic episode that he shouldn't have had to do it himself. Or somebody in the studio or network should have said, "Hey, Rod, you want to have a comedy episode? Good. Don't write it. Give it
I
to somebody else."
I have a question for you, Rick, and both Rick and Robert. What do you think would ever come out of Rod Serling and Stephen King getting together? Do you think that would be phenomenal?
No. He's not a horror one, though, is he, Sterling?
You don't think Stephen King and Rod Serling could do something really phenomenal together?
Because some scenes in the Creepshow movie does have some Twilight Zone-y elements in it, especially the one with Leslie Nielsen and being on the beach, that one.
Oh, okay.
Could have been
yeah.
something Rod could have done for that, yeah.
I think if the two of them ever would have been able to collaborate on something,
great.
That would have been phenomenal. Yeah, I think that would have been phenomenal. I would love to have seen a Serling King production. That would have been unbelievable.
I don't know. I have trouble combining science fiction and horror.
Well, yeah, but don't you think that some of Stephen King's stuff was science fiction as well? I mean, some of his. I mean, I know that Stephen King is mostly related with horror, but some of it was science fiction.
True.
I think between the two of them, they could have come up with a kick-ass type of movie or something.
Well, actually, Serling and Hitchcock would be a good pairing.
Oh, my God.
That
would
have been kind of interesting. That would have been great. Have those two
that
together.
That would have scared the heck out of anybody. That would have been the scariest thing. Your children could never watch it because they would never sleep again.
Lynn, you'd have birds in your shower.
Oh, yes.
you mean Rod writing something and having him direct? Yeah, that would work.
Not only would they attack on the outside, but Rod would set it up to where there would be an opening for the birds to come inside and attack you that way, too.
That's right. And you never want to look out the window again because you'd have vertigo on your mind.
Oh, God. Yes, well, I absolutely, I could see the two of them collaborating. But as far as this episode goes, well, it was just one of those things that Rod decided to do that didn't turn out so great. But as I said, yeah, you know, Burgess Meredith, maybe he couldn't have saved it, but I like to watch him in anything, so I don't really care. You know, it was one of those things that you just say, well, it wasn't one of the best Twilight Zones, but it did have Burgess Meredith in it. You know, that's the way I look at it.
Lynn, in the text, we have Felix in New Jersey, he or she gave it a 2 out of 5. Ray Bradbury
Felix,
would be
I'm
a good
so sorry.
Pairing.
Felix, I'm so sorry. I should have welcomed you earlier. Felix is here. And yes, yeah, you're right. A collaboration with the Ray Bradbury would have been awesome. Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know that Stephen King hated Twilight Zone. Really? Oh.
He loved The Outer Limits, though. Huh.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Thank you, Felix. I had no idea that that was true. And he loved The Outer Limits. Well, maybe The Outer
Limits.
That's
kind of the same vein of Twilight Zone, yeah, so I could see why.
Hmm.
Oh, what was your rating, Rick? You forgot to give a rating.
Oh, 2.
The other thing, Rick, is you said that if an episode is this bad, your tendency would to be blame the director. But in actual fact, this is the same director that did direct it Time Enough at Last with Burgess Meredith. So I think it was the aliens.
Just because he did one episode good doesn't mean that can do everything. Okay, you know Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you like Blade Runner?
Yes. Well, I don't know which version you mean because I think there's about 4 I've seen.
There's about 5 of them out there. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. All 4 of them he directed. All right.
Well, he disallowed at least one of them, so it does matter.
What did you think of Legend?
Legend.
Yes.
Yeah, Tom Cruise, Tim Curry.
Oh, no, that was fantasy, wasn't it? No.
Yeah, kind of fantasy, yeah.
No, I didn't like that.
All right, my case in point. Did a great job on Blade Runner. On Legend. I love the movie, but it's not one of his better movies.
Then, Rick, you give this episode a 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Dave, what do you give this episode?
I gave it a 2.
Okay, and Robert?
2, yeah. So it seems to be the 2s.
Oh, it's 2, not worth...
2 Venusians.
2 Venusians.
or 2 Martians.
And the other thing that was unbelievable about him trying to raise the bar, and my comment was, yeah, you raise the bar, the place is going to collapse. well... But, Bobby, you have any comments or anything you wanted to add?
I have only one more comment about this, regarding this episode and its supposed humor. I'd like to quote Pee Wee Herman, "That's so funny, I forgot to laugh."
We have Lynn. Oh. She kind of disappears as soon as she gets back on. Before we take off here, one of the things I want to bring up and what we discussed with the Twilight Zone or being on Sippy for the 4th of July weekend, Bobby brought that up. And I went ahead and brought up the schedule for July the 3rd and July
the
4th.
Yeah, well, I posted it on the board.
Yeah.
Did you see it on the board?
Yeah, I did. But I kind of have a disagreement, you know, let's play devil advocate here. If I was the executive for the Sippy channel, how would I do a Twilight Zone marathon? And the whole thing is I would run the first episode the first day, and then I would run the last episode the last day. But I noticed on this that they're running the last episode before they're running the pilot.
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, I told Lynn earlier today when I posted it on the board that I think they should have posted on their website, the Sci-Fi Channel's website, and simply ask people what it is they want to see.
Yeah, a poll, definitely.
Don't put things on that nobody wants to see. Just say, well, what do you want to see? Well, we'll do our best to put it on it.
It's like for example, The Bewitching Pool, they're showing July the 3rd at 5:30 p.m. They're showing Where Is Everybody, which is the pilot, the first episode of the series, at 10:30 at night on the same day.
It's ridiculous.
Crazy.
I don't know. We get here now in Seattle a cable network called MeTV. Does anybody get that?
What was that?
MeTV.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're playing The Twilight Zone every day at 11 p.m., at least 11 p.m. on the West Coast. And they're playing them in the exact order. They start with the first one, and they just play them in the
Good.
Order that they were on.
And they should do with the first, second, third, and so on in order. And then wherever the spaces are, pick the least terrible ones to stick in there.
Well, Lynn mentioned to me when she saw Lynn mentioned something interesting to me when we looked over the list, which is the fact that they seem to take the classic episodes and put them in prime time. If you look at that list carefully, you'll see that the best ones are like beginning at 7 o'clock, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 o'clock, and a lot of the really bad ones are relegated to the middle of the night. So
I had to Beholder. Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up, Kick the Can.
Yeah.
The Odyssey of Flight 33, that's July the 4th. That's all in there. Stop at Willoughby after that. Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
Hang on a second. Lynn, let me hand this phone over to Lynn because she lost her connection.
I know. So that's why I'm trying to fill some time.
Hey, I'm sorry. I lost my connection on Skype. Oh, I am so sorry.
Well, just to finish up, I was going to say they end the whole marathon with 22.
Yes,
the very
did,
last
yeah.
episode, yeah, July the 4th at 3:30 a.m. So.
Well, it looks like my Skype is still running, and I'm hoping we're still recording, but I don't know if the show's still recording or not.
Yeah, as long as you're in the pro client room or whatever, it's still recording, and you can still end the show and terminate.
Well, I don't have the chat room up anymore. It's closed down on me.
Well,
your show is still
in it.
It is. All right, great.
Yeah.
Well, then, excellent. Then we have July 16th is the episode Static. Static.
Yep.
And that is July 16th. So we better close out now before I lose anything else. And, I mean, my God.
I hope you don't lose anything else, Lynn.
I hope we don't lose anything else. So, Robert, you'll let me know if the show didn't record in its entirety, but hopefully it does.
It's still being recorded, so I think you're pretty safe.
Awesome. Okay, I hope so. Okay, so guys, hopefully 2 weeks from now, we will see you July 16th for Static. Okay, and hopefully I won't have any static in my broadcast at that time. Okay. So have a happy 4th of July, folks.
Happy 4th, everybody. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye, folks.
Bye, guys.